702 Masterclass.
Today's masterclass focuses on the Protection of Personal Information Act. We've been hearing about POPI for a long, long time. The short for it, of course, is POPI, the POPI Act. And the purpose of the act is to pretty much ensure that all South African businesses conduct themselves in a responsible manner when it comes to collecting, when it comes to processing, storing and sharing the personal information of entities or individuals, and that we're then able to hold them accountable should they abuse or compromise the third party's personal information in any way. Well, the legislation on our personal information is pretty much there to grant you as the owner of your personal information certain rights and protection, and as well as the ability to exercise a certain level of control over this information. And joining us now to guide us through what has been a hell of a long journey is Advocate Alan Lambrecht. Now, he's been involved with data protection training and implementation since 2006. That's how long talk of POPI has been going on for. And that really, and the years of experience make him one of the leading experts on the protection of personal information in South Africa. Good afternoon, Alan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Afternoon, Azania. Afternoon to your listeners. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to the time spent.
Yeah, something you've been living and breathing for how many years now?
Yeah, too many years. So many years. And we're not quite there yet because still, the legislation is there. I mean, the legislation came into, it was gazetted in 2013. That's a number of years ago.
That's 5 years ago.
And the only certain provisions of that legislation that are effective at the moment, and that was really to set up the information regulator. The rest of the provisions of the legislation are still not effective.
Mm-hmm.
So people probably are sitting there thinking, well, why are we discussing it this afternoon on your masterclass?
Yes, yes. So what about this timing right now?
I think timing now is crucial. The reason for me saying that is that during 2016, the regulator was set up with the chairperson, Advocate Pansi Tlakula.
Yes.
I think we recall her from the IEC days.
Mm-hmm.
That was set up. And then during the course of 2017, 2018, they have been busy with draft regulations and actually staffing the regulator. A lot of the executive positions, like the CEO of the regulator, the CFO, and then the execs heading up the POPI side of things, as well as the promotion of access to information, because the regulator looks after both.
Yeah.
Those positions were all advertised during 2018, and to my knowledge, most of those positions have been filled now.
Mm-hmm.
And then regulations came out in December 2018, which is not that long ago. Regulations that we really need in order for POPI to become effective in what I think is the near future. And
yes,
I'm anticipating during the course of this year. So,
yes,
so people need to sort of start taking cognizance of POPI.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I think, are just so punched drunk from hearing about POPI for so many years.
Because there's like bits of it are in place, other bits are not in place.
Yeah.
We're just not sure about where we stand. And so, seemingly business has continued to behave, many in fact have continued to behave in a similar fashion to before. So it's like, okay, POPI is just...
You're still getting all the unsolicited SMSs,
yes,
emails, etc., all that sort of stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
So a number of businesses are POPI compliant and have done a lot to make sure that they are ready for when POPI becomes effective.
Mm-hmm.
A number haven't. And the one interesting one, and the one that you didn't mention earlier on, as you were talking about private bodies, so your companies and that, they've done a lot to it. But POPI applies to all public institutions as well. So that's going to be very interesting to see how ready they are for POPI when it comes in. So your national, municipal, provincial government, POPI applies to all of that.
Yes. Wow. So everybody who handles personal information.
POPI is probably the most intrusive piece of legislation there is, because it affects all organizations, whether they're private or whether they're public. It affects all individuals, you and I, whoever it is, all the listeners out there.
POPI, are you telling me I can't give your details to Jonathan?
Without
your permission. So actually, let's look at what personal information is. What does that call? What falls under that?
Okay, personal information is very widely defined in the Act. I'm not going to go through it all because it's about a page of giving actual examples. So what it really is in a nutshell is any information by which a person, an individual, can be identified either directly or indirectly. So examples there would be that my ID number, for example, is personal information because I can be directly identified from that. That is individual to me, that ID number.
Yes.
But also information which doesn't directly say that this is Alan Lambert, for example.
Like what, the social club I belong to?
It could be a phone number.
Ah.
So, for example, you have a switchboard here, which I assume has a specific number, and somebody phones up here and say they want to speak to Zania.
Mm-hmm.
That might be personal information. It might not. That switchboard number.
Right.
It really depends. Sorry, lawyers love that word, depends.
Yeah.
If there's one Azania here and you had that switchboard number, that would be personal information because you would be able to identify you from that phone number.
Mm.
But if you had five Azanias working here, well, which one of those five would it be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, then that would probably not be considered personal information.
I see.
So you need to look at the context all the time.
Right. So in between all of that, there's a whole lot more. Of course, things like our address, you mentioned our ID number, even our names, telephone numbers. It's a broad range of pieces of information.
Mm.
What about the things that the places we belong to, the country clubs? How narrow is it, or how far-reaching, I should say, is it?
Well, it's far-reaching because the act applies everywhere.
Right.
So anything that can actually identify a person falls within the act itself.
It forms part of my profile.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your email address, all those sort of things, those are all parts of personal information.
So historically, what have we seen in terms of the handling of our personal information, almost to say, what is the background to the need for this act to get us to where we are today?
Okay. So the legislation that we have here is, even though it's taken, you wouldn't believe so because it's taken such a long time, is very heavily influenced by overseas, especially the EU legislation. So in 1995, the EU came out with a directive on data protection, which we call personal information protection, to protect information. And really the reason for this protection of personal information is that personal information can be very dangerous if it gets into the wrong hands or if it's used for a wrong purpose.
Yes.
So people can be very badly
affected.
If their information gets out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that really came from going even further back to the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights that came out in 1946. And if you think about what happened in Europe during the Second World War, people were rounded up and taken to concentration camps. How was that possible?
Yes.
Because people had personal information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can think about that in our own country here in our past.
Mm-hmm.
How were people rounded up and arrested in the middle of the night?
Mm-hmm.
That was because personal information was in the possession of the police at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So personal information, when it's not used properly, can be very harmful.
Yes, to a society.
Yeah.
Wow. So we should actually do this as a country, especially now when you look at online and how much information we're importing on electronically.
And it's worldwide. Protecting personal information is a big thing.
Right.
So we would need to we need this legislation to come in so that we can be seen to have an adequate level of protection of personal information in our own country here, so that information can go cross border.
Right.
There's a lot of things we can talk about that maybe in a little bit more detail just now about information going cross border. But
no, I'm curious about consent. Where does that come into it? Because our outreach right now, a lot of it has to do with who gave you permission?
Yeah. Okay. So in order for anybody to actually process personal information, there has to be a legal basis for that person to process that information. That person we call a responsible party.
Yeah.
That's the party that processes the personal information. It's normally the company that you work for. So that would be Prime Media. That would be the responsible party.
Because I've given them my information.
They have to have some basis for processing any information.
Okay, as my employer, that's their basis for it.
As an employer, it applies to employee information, applies to client information, applies to any personal information.
Okay, so they're the processing.
A lot of organizations just are outward focused, looking at client information, but the POPI Act applies to employee information just as much.
Mm.
So the actual POPI Act itself basically says that there are a number of legal bases on which you can actually process the information. The one that you're mentioning now is consent.
Mm-hmm.
Consent now is quite an interesting one, because that is probably the best legal basis on which to actually process personal information, the easiest one, if you can actually get that, but it's not always possible.
Right.
Because you might not be doing face-to-face getting the personal information. The consent is interesting in that it's different to consent we've seen before. So when you have gone and applied for financing for a vehicle or a clothing account, that sort of thing, you would have seen that there would be a consent part in that document saying you consent to the company actually going and doing a credit check with one of the credit bureaus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sign it, you tick it, and then you sign it, and that's fine, and that's consent given. In terms of Poppy, that would not be sufficient.
Wow.
Okay. In terms of Poppy, consent has to be explicit consent and informed consent. Now, that actually puts quite a big burden on the people that are collecting the information for processing, because the person, first of all, has to know exactly what they're consenting to. It has to be informed. Therefore, they have to be told what is going to be done with their information.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a whole number of conditions which organizations have to comply with.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being openness. And that openness
and transparency,
is transparency, which
we haven't had. Yeah.
So they would need to actually tell you when they're collecting that information, first of all, who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What the information is that they're collecting.
Mm-hmm.
What they're going to use that information for, the purpose for which they're collecting that information, in other words.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that information is going to be shared with any third parties, so if they're going to send it out to a third party to do any processing of that information, whether that information is going to go cross-border.
Hmm.
Also, then they also have to inform the person of all their rights. So they have rights to access the information, the rights to have information corrected if it's incorrect, and also in certain instances, the right to have the information deleted.
Right.
So that all has to happen. So that is all forms part of this consent. So it's very different to what we used to in terms of applying for things.
Absolutely. Wow. I feel empowered already. I feel like the big giants will have someone standing and saying to them, no, you're not doing it the right way. Because I think consumers have for a long time felt like things have been done without their permission. Mm-hmm. You know, your information travels to organizations that you have no direct relationship with. You're getting calls, people off giving you all sorts of offers. And I often say, where did you get my information from? And on the other side, you're met with just stuttering and someone not knowing how to respond to what is a very valid question. So that level of accountability is very, very necessary. How will all of this be stored? And because I have to trust that the integrity of how my information is stored. You were talking about public services, for instance. I remember going to the department to renew my license a few years ago. And I looked at that and I thought, there were files on files and files.
Mm.
It just looked like our information was not stored in a way that would protect my privacy and the integrity of that information.
There are a number of ways in which the legislation looks at that. There are 8 specific conditions in the legislation that need to be complied with by a responsible party in order for them to process that information lawfully.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that information must only be kept for as long as is necessary for the purpose for which it was collected. So if you go and you're applying for finance for a motor vehicle, you fill in this 5-page document. In terms of Poppy, they can only ask information that's relevant. They're not excessive. So they mustn't ask you, what is your dog's name, your mother's name, all these sort of things, unless they can actually reasonably justify that.
Right.
They keep that. And in terms of the legislation, they must then delete or destroy the information once the purpose has been fulfilled.
Wow.
Okay. There's always a but in these things. Poppy is a principles-based piece of legislation. So what I mean by that, it actually says certain things,
mm-hmm.
but it gives not an out, but if you can justify keeping the information longer. So you've applied for your motor vehicle, you've got your motor vehicle.
Yes.
They must then destroy that information.
Yes.
But if they can justifiably or reasonably have a reason for actually keeping that information for longer,
mm-hmm.
then they can. But the onus is then on the responsible party to be able to justify that to the regulator. That they
what would be justifiable? We're doing market research. What? What would be justifiable? We want to understand the profile of our customer. I mean, what's...
Something like that could be that they would want to go back in case you had actually misrepresented your income, something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
So as long as they could justify it, and you'd need to look at the specific circumstances. When I do a training, a lot of delegates come in there and expect to walk away with answers on how they're actually going to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
Being principles-based, that's not the case. People need to go back and actually look at each specific instance and say, okay, so Poppy says that we must delete this information once the purpose has been achieved.
Yes.
Right, that's fine.
Yes.
But can we justify, do we have a need to keep that information for a longer period?
Mm.
So obviously accounting records and that type of thing, you would need to keep for a longer period because your Companies Act and your Tax Administration Act and that require you to keep the information longer.
Correct.
But if you have a legitimate business reason to keep that information for a longer time period and you can justify that, which you would be able to do because it's a legitimate business reason, then you can actually keep that information.
Would restrictions apply that even if they get to keep it longer, the what they use it for becomes
there would be a specific use that you would need to be able to justify it, but then there are other uses. So if you're going to use it for historical research, statistical purposes, that type of thing, you can keep the information, but then you have to put specific security.
Okay.
And we're coming back to the security that you were asking about earlier on. You need to put specific security safeguards into place to protect that information so that it can only be used for those specific purposes.
Yes.
So that's the first one. The second one that is that the security condition. So there is a specific condition, one of the eight that I referred to earlier on, that talks about securing personal information.
Mm-hmm.
So all responsible parties need to take reasonable steps to secure the information so that it's not unauthorized, so there's no unauthorized access, it's not mistakenly lost or erased,
right,
that type of thing. What is the reasonable steps? Well, that depends, the reasonable security, that depends on the type of personal information. So if it's just a list of names with telephone numbers, you don't have to do
too much. So if it's my blood tests, for instance.
Blood tests, that then is sensitive personal data, and you would need to have very good safety precautions in terms of that, because that is sensitive information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But for normal information, you wouldn't have to do the same thing as you say for blood tests or medical records and that type of thing. So you'd actually have to look at it and then see what is reasonable. Also, what is the industry standard, if there is an industry standard on that protection?
Right.
And it comes down to things from whether you have security or require security at the entrance to your building, whether you leave files lying around on your desk, whether you should, a phone number you can leave on your desk. That's fine. But if you've got personal files with people's, say your HR department.
And you walk away to go make a cup of tea.
And you've got a file there.
Locked.
And you've got medical records in there, sick notes and stuff. That's sensitive personal information. You should actually just make an effort then to actually take that file and just lock it in a credenza before going away or going home and that type of thing. So certain information needs to be protected more than others.
So even in how we do things, and we'll continue this after the break, because we're taking headlines now with Refilwe, how it's going to affect our operations at a practical level has to be communicated, not just what the organization is doing, but obviously everybody within an organization needs to have a top of mind that they're handling, and when they are handling personal information around what they do with it. So we'll expand a little bit more on that with my guest. That's Advocate Alan Lambert, and he's a leading expert on Poppy, and he's also from Lambert Legal Consulting. He's been working on the protection of personal information, not the act per se, but training and the implementation of Poppy since 2006. We'll take your calls. What questions do you have? Are you ready? Maybe you're a small business like we are. Are we ready?
Masterclass.
It's 24 minutes to 3, really. It's been so fascinating getting to better understand the Protection of Personal Information Act. We have, this year is going to be quite crucial because the Information's Regulator has been set up. Advocate Pansi Tlakula is the chairperson. Lots of things have moved and changed in the past year, and it's believed that this year Poppy will come into full effect properly. So it won't hurt to get ready. It won't hurt to prepare, because this is certainly where the future is going. The law exists. And joining us this afternoon for the masterclass on Poppy is Advocate Alan Lambert, and he's a leading expert on Poppy. He's been working on its implementation as well as training on Poppy since 2006, and he's from Lambert Legal Consulting. What questions do you have? There are just so many, Alan. What a myriad. Let's start with Steve in Waverley. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Yes, welcome.
Okay, Alan, I'd like to ask a question, please. Business cards and Poppy, what's the impact of that going to be?
Okay. What's your concern specifically, Steve?
Well, we've been doing electronic business cards for a while. We've had to conform with GDPR in Europe. But there's a whole lot of stuff that I've heard that I just don't really understand regarding a business card. And it varies in different countries from what I've heard. I just want to know if it's going to impact sorry.
Okay.
It's fine. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Great question.
All right, Steve. So when you have the business card, you're handing it out to business associates, but the fact that you're actually giving it across to a business associate is really giving your consent for them to actually take that card and store the information so that they can contact you previously. In terms of that, and actually being able to use that information so that they can contact you for future business purposes, that's fine, not an issue with that. There probably would be an issue, though, if they took that business card and handed it on to somebody else.
Yes.
Unless when they received the business card from you, they actually requested your permission to actually give that business card to third parties.
Right. Or you said, oh, go ahead and share it with your colleagues. Let's go to Richard in Craigall Park. Hello, Richard.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Alan, my question is this. It seems to be when you go to certain places, you come up to a boom, and in the old days, you fill in your motor car number, your name, and who you wanted to see. I was at a place the other day where they wanted name, address, telephone number, ID number, and email address. Hmm. And besides the fact that it takes forever to fill all that in, under the Poppy Act, would that be a legitimate questions to ask?
Right. Richard, is that the end of your question?
Yeah, I'll listen on the radio.
Thank you very much, Richard. Carl seems to be also heading in the same direction, so I'm going to take both of them together. Hello, Carl.
My question, I've been in the security industry for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you go into a complex, often they want to scan your driver's license.
Yeah.
Now, what I've try to find out, and there's only certain companies that have access to it, is they're actually hooking into the national database. Now, if you actually look at the screen, depending on which software you run, when they scan your driver's license, it actually gives your physical residential address on there as well.
Hmm.
Now, I know there are cases where the guys at the gate are connected with guys robbing a house, because they can turn around and say, listen, go rob this house. I know he's here in our property now.
Okay. Got you.
Now, how are they getting access to that information, right? And how are they actually getting hold of Home Affairs information? I mean,
yes, and how does Poppy protect us from things like that?
Exactly.
All right, cool.
One more other part is IEC also limited to the Poppy Act? Because they're also known for selling information.
The IEC?
IEC, election committee?
Yes, yes. Okay, I don't know about the selling, but you're concerned about the information they have.
Yes, because I know where I can actually buy that information.
Oh, wow. Carl, thank you for the call.
From the national database.
Yes, thank you for the call. And if anything, on, was it election day? On election day, we had Advocate Pensi Tlakula just talking to her about her time at the IEC, what that kind of operation takes to run successfully, and also what she's doing now. And she did talk about how the IEC will need to take into consideration the implications of Poppy and how this is changing electoral bodies around the world, because now they're asking serious questions about the information that the IECs or electoral bodies sit with. Let's start with security.
Sure, quite a number of issues that have been raised there.
Mm.
So in terms of the security and going into these complexes and getting all this information, the second condition for the processing of personal information lawfully is that information collected must be adequate for the purpose. So they need to collect sufficient information from you in order to have the security of the complex. The information has to be relevant and not excessive. So in terms of the first one, I think it was Steve who was talking about the email address. To me, that would not be relevant. What is the relevancy of that email address in terms of the security of the complex? So in terms of processing limitation, condition two, that would probably be, in my view, too much information. They just need to collect sufficient.
Oh, like he was saying, it was name, email address, telephone number, blah, blah, yeah. blah, blah. So that's too much.
As we were talking earlier on, when you're giving this information, they need to tell you the purpose and what's actually going to be done with that information.
Right.
So where this information is coming up in terms of the second one, where they're scanning the driver's licenses and it's bringing up home addresses and that type of thing, that information is not required. And it has got absolutely nothing to do with the security of that complex.
So that would be illegal?
It could be illegal, and I'm
Especially, probably not effective as yet.
Yes. But unless they could justify it, and I don't see any grounds for justifying getting the person's home address. But if they could justify it, then it could be okay.
Or even in our interactions with Home Affairs, if they haven't communicated with us to tell us that your information will be linked to security companies, then this process is incorrect. If what Carl is saying, if this is what happens, then there are problems at a number of steps.
That's the openness that we discussed earlier on.
Yeah.
They have to be open and have to be able to tell you what they're going to do with that information, who it's going to be shared with.
Okay. And then the IEC?
The IEC, once again, they are bound by POPI.
Mm-hmm.
So they would need to follow the 8 conditions just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to be open with that information.
Mm-hmm.
Sharing information is also how do people get this information, selling information.
How do we prove that?
It's a very difficult one to prove.
Yes.
In terms of POPI, people cannot do that unless they've got this explicit consent to do that, and I don't think many people would be giving that consent.
Mm-hmm.
So the unsolicited electronic communications is, in terms of POPI, is being curtailed.
Yes.
I think that's why we've been receiving so many of these emails and SMSs over the last couple of years.
And now we're also getting people saying what the DA did will now come to an end. Lokiso says, now we're equipped to face the DA when they bombard us with calls and SMSs in the next elections. Yeah.
I'm not going to get into politics, but these SMSs, we get them from all over the place coming through.
Mm.
And yes, POPI should reduce that dramatically. The only thing is, if you look at the UK and you look at the Information Commissioner's office there, which is the equivalent of the Information Regulator here, on a monthly basis, they're publishing lists and lists of people that are being fined for doing this direct marketing.
Wow.
And I think it's built into cost of business, these fines.
Yes.
So, yeah, hopefully that's not going
to happen. These organizations are taking the risk anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. So what are the powers then? What powers does the regulator have? Because I want to know what the fines are.
Okay. So the regulator has a number of powers.
Mm.
But really what it comes down to is if an organization or a responsible party is found to have breached any of the 8 conditions or some of the other things within the legislation, they can give an enforcement notice telling the responsible party to change their behavior, to stop processing certain information, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
They can give an administrative fine up to a maximum of 10 million.
Wow.
Which to large corporates is not huge.
Mm.
And I think that's why I was saying in the UK, a lot of people just carry on and they do it and they're prepared to pay the fines.
Sure.
But the thing that really to me is more of a deterrent for people actually not obeying is reputational risk. We hear fairly regularly about leaks of personal information, Facebook. Mm. We hear it. When it happens around the world, we hear it here.
Mm.
And when it happens here, we hear about it here.
Mm.
That is bad for the company's reputation. People don't want to deal with institutions or responsible parties
that we can't trust,
that are perceived to be lackadaisy about protecting personal information.
Yes.
So if you're looking at a policy, for example, and you have one company that has been in the news and another company that hasn't, you're probably going to take the policy for the company that wasn't in the news.
Yes, absolutely. So let's take a few more calls before we could take a break. Trevor, you're in Four Ways. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're good. Welcome.
No, thank you. Just listening to the calls and you know, one of the core themes that is coming through, obviously, is just all about consent. And I think that's what's important for people to understand when it comes to POPI, is that you give away your personal information with your consent. So I thought the example with the business card is a good one.
Mm.
And perhaps you'll see business cards changing in the future. But from my personal perspective and the business that I'm in, which is visitor management solutions, when it comes to scanning driver's IDs and vehicles, we also need to understand that there's a huge amount of information that is inherently embedded in the PDF 417 barcode.
Yeah.
Which, whereupon on scanning it, information is immediately available. So there doesn't need to be a link to get it from the Department of Home Affairs.
Oh, thank you for explaining that. So it's in the barcode, yeah.
It's in the barcode. So there is a certain amount. I mean, the practicalities of that are great for law enforcement agencies in that they're not always having to connect to the internet to get basic information about a vehicle, about a person and their driver's license.
Very helpful.
Similarly with the South African credit card size ID. So I think that's important for listeners to understand. And I think what's important from people that are processing personal information and what we advise our clients is full disclosure. So make sure that you have poppy notices at your premises. You put them up. That there's a clear understanding. We talk about responsible parties, custodians of the information. And just that your visitors or anybody entering some premises, they understand that.
Yeah.
And also what's important is right of admission. Where we have scenarios, and I mean, obviously we've seen the history of our country and the preparation of spatial planning, et cetera. And then obviously a country that is faced with a crime problem, let's not ignore the elephant in the room. Right of admission is important. If we want to tell somebody you cannot come into a certain place, we must have right of admission. If part of the rules of giving people admission rights is to process certain information, I want your name, I need your telephone number, etc., then it must be disclosed. And we say, right, okay, in order for you to gain admission, we want this information.
Right.
However, ask the questions and be sensible as a visitor, for instance. Does someone really need my email address to give me admission?
Mm-hmm.
I can understand the cell phone number from an occupational health and safety perspective in the event of an emergency. We would like to get to see, are you okay? There's a fire. Have you reached the assembly point?
Yeah.
We need to contact you. So that kind of information, it's understandable.
All right.
So I think that's important for people to understand.
Trevor, thank you. Actually, thank you for adding meat to some of the things that have arisen. That was Trevor Outer in Four Ways. And we're going to continue with my guest after this. Implication on CCTV footage, for instance. We kind of understand a bit more about the direct marketing industry and how this is going to affect them. But there's still a whole lot more to unpack in the last segment of our conversation for today's masterclass with Advocate Alan Lambert, leading expert on Poppy, and he's also from Lambert Legal Consulting.
702 Masterclass.
It's now 9 minutes to 3 o'clock, and back to the phone lines as we wrap up our masterclass on Poppy. Sean in Sunning Hill, good afternoon.
Hi, Zania, and to the advocate. I'd just like to find out, there's a corporate who apparently I can't name who buys and sells people's personal information. I've had a long history of fighting with them to try and get them to, kind of delete my information. What kind of power would I have now with Poppy in order to kind of hold them accountable for doing this? And I would assume that it's not retrospective, the fact that they've been doing this for the last few years. It doesn't mean I could kind of take action on them. Is that correct? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean.
Okay, so it won't be retrospective in terms of that, but going forward, once it becomes effective, the sale of this information will no longer be allowed, and the direct marketing will only be allowed to happen where it is the responsible party themselves that contact you to sell you a product from a product that you've bought from them previously. It has to be similar to that, so it can't be different. So if you'd gone and bought a pair of jeans from a specific outlet, they couldn't then come and try and sell you insurance. And every time that they would approach you to actually try to do the direct marketing, they would have to give you the option to say, no, I don't want to hear from you anymore, and they would have to respect that.
Mm. Wow, so it's with the person that you have the direct engagement with.
Yeah.
When it is a third party, then you have a right to... What are your rights in that case?
So third party, so you go to shop A and you get contacted by shop B.
Yes.
Shop B has no right to that information.
Okay.
The shop A, unless they have actually got your permission to give that information to shop B.
So we have to read that fine print as much as possible, understand and read it for ourselves, apart from them informing us of what we agree. agreement?
Well, in terms of that openness, they have to be, the consent has to be informed.
Okay.
So putting it in a small print hidden away on page 7 is probably not going to be sufficient.
All right. So they also have to inform us. And as you said, it's hard to prove when someone has unsold your information or passed it on.
Yeah.
So what is the recourse? As you said, what can he do? And will Poppy be able to bring this to an end?
Okay, that's where one of the functions of the information regulator. So an issue like that would be taken to the information regulator. The information regulator would then investigate these complaints.
Yeah.
And then they have the powers, if necessary, to give the enforcement notice, penalties, etc.
There we go.
Yeah.
Arthur in Boksburg. Hello, Arthur.
Hi, Vanya. How are you?
Good, and you?
Oh, good. Alan, how are you doing, man?
I'm very well on yourself.
Well, Alan, I have a slight challenge with regards to your Poppy Act. It would appear that it is just some kind of lame duck or some kind of legislature which doesn't carry any muscle whatsoever. For instance, it would appear that all your online platforms, the biggest guilty part in this regard, obviously Google, can process data without any hesitation. 2014, the Spanish court brought out the right to be forgotten, and it would appear that I have written to your chairperson Pansy to date no reply, because I wanted to check. Coming to data processing, why, if a media house writing some kind of a stupid article or any consumer in South Africa, and wants to try to obviously take that article to the courts or on review, for instance, I'm going to make a short an example.
Quickly, Arthur.
A person got arrested, and that case got nowhere. But then, for instance, one of the powerful media houses decide, look, we're not going to remove that article. It must stay on the platform for a number of period, although it became outdated.
Oh, got you. All right. Because we don't have...
You hear what I'm saying?
Yes, and we don't have the right to forget me.
Absolutely. When you challenge that via your information regulator, they got no muscle whatsoever. The judges are not clued up with any whatsoever data processing. Now, my question to Alan in short is, did you train the judges? Did you train even your Pansy Kakulas of this world and so forth?
All right. Thank you, Arthur. And just to create a distinction, what Alan does is that the legal consultancy provides training. He's not within the regulator or within the state. So let's quickly respond to that, because I have one more question before we need to wrap up.
So the 8 conditions that need to be adhered to are not effective as yet. So judges have not been trained on it. Mm-hmm. It is not enforceable as yet.
Yeah.
As to not getting responses from regulators, I can't comment on that.
Yes.
In terms of the things you're talking about, Google, Facebook, those sort of things, well, there have been instances where fines have actually been levied.
Mm-hmm. In other jurisdictions?
In other jurisdictions, okay. Yes. Well, we can't do it here yet because it's not effective.
Mm.
So it is a case that, yes, there is an issue, and trying to keep up with the way technology is advancing with all these social platforms and that, the law is not quite as adept and quick.
Yes,
but,
yes.
You know, it is there to protect personal information, so there is recourse, and recourse has been effective.
Right.
In other jurisdictions.
In the past. And what about against media houses, the example he gave?
Media houses, that's an interesting one, because Poppy applies to all personal information, but there are certain exemptions. And there is an exemption for journalism and media houses, but subject to certain requirements.
What are the other exemptions? Just a quick list of them.
Personal information that you use for purely household uses. So the information on your cell phone, your friend's birthday, all that sort of stuff like that. That personal stuff is exempt from it. And also if information is de-identified.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is quite an important one. De-identified is basically if you anonymize personal data. So if you get a whole spreadsheet and you take out people's names, but you can still use that information for a specific purpose, take that identifying information out. The moment information is de-identified or anonymized, it's no longer personal information, therefore the POPIA Act doesn't apply.
CCTV, quickly.
CCTV, fine. There's legitimate business purposes for actually using CCTV. As long as you make people aware that there is CCTV.
That
you'll see that even before Poppy, like now, you see these signs around.
Are children protected the same as over 18s?
Slightly different in that they have to have parent or guardian consent for their personal information to be processed.
That sounds about good. Thank you very much, Alan. Do you have a website?
No, I don't. But the contact details, if you want to put them up on your
email us and we'll pass you on. But it's Alan Lambert, Advocate Alan Lambert, and he does training and helps organizations implement Poppy. And that was our masterclass on Poppy. Email us, Anya, at 702.co.za.